The following program is brought to you by your friends at TheForce.net.
Oh, Maxie bit the Force.
And RebelScum.com.
You Rebel Scum.
The galaxy is listening.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
This is a Forcecast Microcast.
Nice, Magic Back.
Brought to you by TheForce.net and RebelScum.com.
You may fire when ready.
Strap in, grab on, and get your geek on, because this is Comic-Con 2007.
Star Wars toys!
Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back Collection.
Now you're playing with the power.
Star Wars Power of the Force.
You stay classy, San Diego.
Comic-Con!
Hey, Forcecast fans, Jimmy Mack here with you. Welcome to the Forcecast coverage of the 2007 San Diego Comic-Con. Taking place at the end of July, the Comic-Con is the biggest of its kind, drawing thousands of people from all over the globe. This con is infamous for featuring a strong Star Wars presence, and this year was no exception. In attendance, you could find Star Wars actors, authors, and artists. Hasbro, of course, is always there, along with other Star Wars licensees and Lucasfilm representatives. As you should know by now, the motto here at the Forcecast is, no fan left behind. So we dispatched Forcecast correspondent, the Super Suck Lord, the genius behind Suckadelic Star Wars Breakbeat CD, available at Suckadelic.com. Sucklord turned the San Diego Comic-Con floor upside down, and he talked to everyone. Let's catch up with the Sucklord and Lucasfilm website wizard and author of How to Draw Star Wars, Bonnie Burton.
Sitting here with the big dog over here, and we're going to get right into this super action interview. Your name, please?
Bonnie Burton.
And what is your official title?
I'm an internet content provider, which is a fancy word for writer for Lucasfilm, and most importantly, StarWars.com. But I also wrote the book, You Can Draw Star Wars, with DK Publishing.
Now, how'd you get into this Star Wars racket? How long you been at Lucasfilm?
I've worked at Lucasfilm for 4 years, and I've always been a fan of Star Wars when I was a kid, and I applied for the job when I found it on Craigslist, of all places. They were looking for someone that was into marketing and understood teen girls, and I do a website called girl.com, which is G-R-R-L.com, and I'd been running that site since 96, and I understood teen stuff because I was doing a lot of things with Excite and At Home Network and AOL, and I just on a fluke applied for the job, and my would-be bosses and I were big Simpsons fans, and we bonded over Simpsons, and I got the job.
Wow, a dream come true in a way.
Yeah, it was cool. I'm glad I knew a lot about the Simpsons.
A lot of people who work for Lucasfilm seem to have a similar story, you know, where they started out as fans and had something cool going, and they just flipped it into a regular job, which is awesome. So what does it exactly take to, like, market Star Wars to teens and teen girls?
Well, one thing they're really into is crafts. So I started a craft section on the actual kids section. So if you go to StarWars.com/kids, you'll see a crafting section. And because I wanted to do things that were more hands-on, so it wasn't just you're celebrating Star Wars digitally, like through video games or watching it on your computer, but you also get to make things. So you can make, like, an action figure Christmas wreath or a R2-D2 droidal, which is like a dreidel that looks like a droid.
Ah, Lachaim.
And, thank you. And also I did a bunch of, like, sock puppet toys and things like that. And it's just a fun way for girls to express themselves in a non-guy ways, because they're really into it. And I also started a section called Star Wars Rocks, where I interview celebrities and actors and bands who are big Star Wars fans. Because most girls probably wouldn't come to StarWars.com, but if there's an interview with Fall Out Boys, or Nine Inch Nails, or MXPX, or Jane Wheedlin from the Go-Go's, then they'll probably come to the site because they're fans of that music, or they're fans of the actors or comedians I interview. So it's a good way to market to teens.
Yeah, that's a good call, and it just seems more interesting because it seems like over the years, you know, Star Wars has gotten a little more hip,
yeah,
as it were.
Well, it's definitely infiltrated pop culture in all different levels. Like, obviously, Robot Chicken did a Star Wars show, a Star Wars special, so did Family Guy. Simpsons always does Star Wars references. Even in the UK, Simon Pegg's show Spaced did a bunch of Star Wars references. So, and Saturday Night Live does too. So it's just one of those things where it's really gone all over the place.
Right.
And we wanted to bring that to the forefront so people knew we had a sense of humor about our property and that we cared what the fans did with it.
Yeah, that's important, you know, because that's something that might not necessarily have been the case, say, 10 years ago. I mean, I noticed that Star Wars Insider Magazine went from being pretty straight you know, pure Star Wars to getting to loosening up over the years and embracing, like you say, kind of responding to it's what's happened in pop culture.
Yeah, and we actually have changed publishers for Star Wars Insider.
That happens often, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, like it happens a lot in the magazine industry, but we've done it a few times, so I think each time it kind of gets reinvented. And our latest publishers, Titan, who are out of the UK, tend to do a lot more pop culture stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what the magazine does, and we always like what fans are into, and so I always try to do like more lowbrow stuff, like the, you know, Star Wars graffiti, or talk about the Vader project, which has been huge. It's super cool, and
right.
The fans have been really loving that. So just try to get outside of just the hardcore Star Wars stuff and more into pop culture.
Right, yeah, that's important. That's like just another way to just keep it going. So
yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about the How to Draw Star Wars book. How did that come about? Were you already at Lucas when that came
yeah,
out?
Yeah, I started doing the kids section as soon as I was at, well, maybe like a couple of months into Lucasfilm. Our current editor of the kids section had left, and it was time to kind of reinvent what that section meant. And I thought it would be fun to do some drawing stuff, because I remember when I was a kid, I always liked to doodle and sketch, and I was a big fan of Bob Ross, the guy who was like the crazy hair,
right,
did
right.
Happy Little Trees.
Yeah, he's amazing.
So I always wanted to learn how to do this stuff, but we didn't have an actual book that was updated. There was a book in the 80s that was kind of a cool Star Wars drawing book, but there was nothing with prequel stuff, obviously, so I thought it would be fun to update. But the thing was, I had to kind of prove to our publishing company, our publishing Lucas Books, that kids would buy this book. So I started the You Can Draw, or not You Can Draw, but Learn to Draw Star Wars on StarWars.com/kids. If you go over there, you'll find all of our tutorials for like 3 years. And it just became more and more popular, where I'd ask artists, everyone from like Randy Martinez to Tom Hodges to Matt Bush, Cynthia Cummins, Chris Travis, like anyone that would be willing to do it for free, because we didn't really have a budget.
Right.
And they did these drawing tutorials, and it just took off, and kids loved it, and they would send us tons of mail with these drawings. And I finally kind of proved to our publishing house that, you know, this would sell really well, and kids are wanting this. And so DK Publishing offered to do the book, and we got a couple artists involved, and it just took off, and it was great. And Matt Bush and Tom Hodges were the artists that are involved in the book, and then I wrote it.
Far out. That's
yeah.
awesome.
And yeah,
now, is there various drawing styles? I mean, can we learn how to draw Star Wars cartoons? Or
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Is it all over the place? I haven't had a chance to thumb through it, really.
Yeah, sure. Matt Bush does mostly photoreal type stuff, so you can learn how to draw actual Star Wars characters and things like that. Tom Hodges is very cartoony, and then he also explores anime, because a lot of kids are really into anime. And then at the back of the book, we show you how to write a comic book script.
Oh.
So if you're a big fan of comic books, but you don't know how they're made, we explain how you do storyboarding, how you do scripting, how you do thought bubbles, how you do text, how you do inking and coloring. So it's really actually pretty extensive, and it's a good primer for any kid that wants to learn just the basics, as well as art school theory, as well as how to do their own comic book.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So in conclusion, though, this is Comic-Con special, so like, how has the con worked out for you? Is relating to all these things that you do. Is this your first time at Comic-Con?
Oh, no. I've been going to Comic-Con since I was in college.
Right.
So I always go. Even before I worked at Lucasfilm, I came here. It's actually kind of cool to come here as an author, because I do book signings and Star Wars tutorials, like how to draw. So we just did a panel today, which is Sunday, which is Kids Day. And so that was kind of fun to see a full room of kids and parents learning how to draw. And it's always fun to do that. But I love coming here every year. And also, it's just fun to see the Vader project here. I love seeing the R2KT, pink, R2D2. So there's some great stuff here, and I love coming here every year, and I probably will no matter I work for Lucasfilm or not.
Right. Well, it's a big trough, that Star Wars.
Yeah.
And everybody's feeding off of it, and it's a great thing.
Yeah. I mean, I hope fans continue to love it as much as we love doing stuff for them, and I think they will, and it's always fun to see little kids dress up as Star Wars characters.
It looks like I think it's a done deal that it's going to keep going for a while. I mean, I must say, like, when I went to Celebration 4, I was a little skeptical, like, oh, I don't know what's coming next. There's no movies left. Is this going to get boring?
Right. Well, we do the TV show, obviously, the animated series. We're doing a live-action TV show. We do video games, comics, books.
Definitely.
I mean, so it's not going away, and hopefully we'll do more mashups. Like, I loved the whole Star Wars Transformers toys.
Right.
And it'd be great if we did a cartoon. It'd be great if there was, like, more stuff like that.
I mean, it's true. Like, when I first got to C4, I was a little skeptical, but by the end of the weekend, I was convinced, you know, that it's not going anywhere. It was, like, very inspiring. And a lot of that inspiration also did come from the fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just seeing how people are really willing to, like, keep it going. And it's like, it's just so much more interesting to see how Star Wars starts to become more of a two-way street. You know, there's like a lot of dialogue between the fans.
There's a dialogue, and we love it when fans do stuff with our property. Like, Fan Film Awards are a good example.
Right.
We love mashups, so we have a mashup site on StarWars.com where you can make your own, like, YouTube-type videos of things where you put yourself in the movie and have fun with it. And it's just one of those things where I hope, you know, we have a social networking component to it, and we have, like...
Or like a Star Wars MySpace.
Yeah, like, I would love to see us move forward as technology moves forward, and more fans do things online where we can, like, help them celebrate their fandom and do fun stuff and do funky things.
It's an exciting time to be a Star Wars fan.
Yeah, and you know what? It's fun to see, like, people have fun with it. And we have a sense of humor about it, just like everybody else, and we like to see fans do different and new things, and we always like that contact and that constant feedback, and that's why we come here, so we can be face-to-face with the fans, and they can tell us what they want, and we can hopefully adapt to that.
Right. Well, Bonnie Burton, it's been swell talking to
you. Yeah, it's been great talking to you, too.
Yeah, may the force be with you, as they say.
Indeed, may the force be with you as well.
This year, Comic-Con International celebrated its 38th year of providing access to the year's top comics and popular arts. And the next stop for Sucklord was the Hasbro booth.
Continuing coverage of Comic-Con 2007, ForceCast at TheForce.net. This is the Super Sucklord on the floor at the Hasbro booth here at Comic-Con San Diego, talking to a heavy, heavy cat in the Star Wars universe. Your name, sir?
Daryl DePriest.
And what is your official job title?
I'm a Senior Director of Marketing for the Boys Toy Group at Hasbro.
And what specifically does that job entail?
Well, it basically means I have the privilege of directing the Lucasfilm properties, both Star Wars and Indiana Jones.
So when it comes to Star Wars toys, the buck stops here, correct?
Sort of, but it's a whole team with, everyone kind of gets a vote, but...
But you're in charge of that team. Don't be modest. I mean, that's your job, right?
That is correct.
And how did you come to get into this position? I understand you came from the fan world. That's the mythology, at least.
Yeah, I've been an action figure, you know, collector my whole life, and big fans of Star Wars, G.I. Joe, superheroes.
You started at G.I. Joe.
I started at G.I. Joe. That was my first job at Hasbro, and I pretty much got it because I'm a kids marketer at heart. That's what I was doing before I came to Hasbro.
Right.
But I wrote a book on the history of the 12-inch G.I. Joe. You know, which is like a complete photo guide to that whole time period.
Yeah, it's an awesome book. I've seen it.
Oh, thanks, man. And that's what I really grew up with. And so I portrayed that into my book.
And did they come to you after the book came out?
Well, sort of. I was also interested in going to Hasbro, so they kind of knew me already. And basically when they closed down the Cincinnati office, which used to be Kenner,
right,
and moved everything to Rhode Island, a slot opened up for me and they brought me in.
And then how did you make the switch over to Star Wars?
Well, after I was on Joe for about, I want to say about 3.5 years or something like that, I think... You know, I needed a fresh perspective, and the company at the time wanted a fresh perspective on G.I. Joe, so it made sense for me to switch over. So I tossed my hat in the ring. I said, love to do Star Wars, and it happened. They said, that's a great idea. Come on over. After about 3.5 years on G.I. Joe, I think I needed a fresh, you know, change, shift up the kind of the brand experience. I think Hasbro really wanted a fresh set of eyes on G.I. Joe.
Right.
And so I tossed my hat in the ring. I said, what about Star Wars? And they said, that's a great idea. Let's make it work. And basically I came onto the Star Wars team as director of basically of product development and marketing.
Is that normal for a corporate entity like Hasbro to call somebody who's such an obvious fan, to put them in such a position of power, or was that sort of a new thing?
Well, you know, Hasbro's changing, right?
Obviously, yeah.
We're much more in tune, I think, now with the fan base than we have been in the past. And what really matters is passion. If you have passion for a brand, that really helps, you know, unlock the potential of it and also forms a bond with the fans.
But you need more than passion, too. You've got to have a brain behind it.
That's right. And that's why, you know, without the previous marketing experience I had, I wouldn't be here either. But it meant a lot. And it meant a lot to Lucasfilm, too, to have somebody there who's really passionate about it and who really understands you know, kind of all the nuances, not just the films, but everything beyond the films, too, the lifestyle that really is Star
Wars. Well, yeah, I mean, it's obvious. You obviously live that lifestyle. It's like I've seen you on your hands and knees crawling around, shuffling through boxes at 11 o'clock at night in these room-to-roomers, you know, looking for, you know, missing pieces to your vintage collection. I mean, I haven't necessarily seen that type of commitment from, like, other marketing guys that have done the same thing you do, but apparently it seems to be working because the line is bigger and better than it's ever been, and you seem to be getting a lot of, you know, response for the fans. You're a popular guy. Everybody wants a piece of you. I had to wait 3 days to get this interview. I mean,
well, that's, you know, not by choice. I mean, first of all, you know, these shows are tough, just on being able to, you know, serve everyone that I feel we want to talk to. Like, I want to talk to every single fan who comes by and, you know, find out what they think about the line, where they want to see us go next. And, you know, with all the fan sites who are here, too, you know, it's just, you know, time is short. But,
yeah, I know.
But you're right. I mean, I come to these shows, too, so, you know, I can fill some holes in my own personal want list, you know. You know, vintage Star Wars. There's even some recent, you know, more current Star Wars stuff that I need still.
Right.
G.I. Joe, and, you know, I've got my comic book want list, too.
Oh, God.
But the challenge is tough because, you know, the deeper we get into talking to fans about the product, it's like less time for the personal stuff.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. Well, you might have to get a costume or something. I mean, is it really important to come to these events over and over again and represent like this? Because it's obviously not cheap to do this kind of thing. I mean, you got all kinds of elaborate displays. You got all kinds of people on your staff. I mean, it's obviously there's a lot of benefit in doing something like Comic-Con. You know, I mean, how important is that?
Well, I think it's vital for us to be at Comic-Con and actually bring the team here so they can interact with fans and talk to fans face-to-face. You know, the semi-weekly Q&A that we do with the fan sites has been awesome. But still, you know, we crave the direct personal, you know, interaction that you can't get anywhere else. The flip side of that is because we usually want to bring the whole team to talk to people, it means it's a lot of days out of the office that you know, people would otherwise be getting work done. So we have to limit the number of shows we do every year. Like, we would love to go to Philadelphia and New York and Chicago and all the other shows to touch fans all over the country. But the reality is we just have to, you know, pick our time, pick our shows. And, you know, Comic-Con is really the anchor of our yearly event, and the celebration, too, when they happen.
Right, of course.
And Comic-Con's especially important because of the timing. If you think about it, you know, we reveal a lot of new stuff around the Toy Fair time back in February. But then here, summer, you know, in late July, it gives us an opportunity to not only show what's coming out for the rest of the year, but also to give a sneak peek into the year, you know, what next year is looking like. And, you know, we'll do that on our Hasbro panel and things like that. And that's where I, you know, really love being able to give fans a glimpse of what's coming. So they remain optimistic and, you know, buzzed.
Does the fan input make, like, because you're very interested and eager to take fans' suggestions. I mean, does that make it, at the end of the day, does it make your job harder or easier to have to, you know, take in all this commentary and translate it into a commercially viable product?
Well, actually, what we can't take from fans are ideas for new toys, but what we do like to listen to is ideas on figures that they'd love to see.
But so wait, if somebody says, hey, I got an idea, I want you to make this particular toy, you got to be like, sorry, got to go. I mean, how does that work? I mean, how do you mean you can't take their idea?
Well, if it's an idea for a new toy, like a new invention.
Right. They have to go through a particular channel to submit.
Exactly. And if anybody listening to this has ideas on new toys that they want to see made, they think they have a great idea. Well, we personally can't listen to that. We always say, you know, go to the Hasbro website, Hasbro.com, and look on customer service. There should be an FAQ there for how do I submit ideas for toys. And we tell you, basically, if you have a great idea, there are outside toy inventors, guys who will help package that and bring it to
They're
us.
Like brokers and agents and stuff like that.
Exactly. So, and basically it's very simple. We're protecting fans who have a great idea. Like, if, you know, if they tell
us an
idea.
You're protecting yourself, too, in case you get accused of ripping someone off.
Exactly. And also their idea may be worth a lot. And, you know, it works both ways.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that doesn't mean somebody couldn't say, hey, I saw, like, X Cantina creature. Would you make a figure of that? That doesn't count. Right?
Well, that doesn't count because we don't own the Star Wars figures. Lucasfilm owns Star Wars figures. So a fan suggesting, like, you know, can you do Dice, you know, Ibagon from Cantina? It's like, well, we could say that's a good idea, you know, and maybe it influences something in the line. But that's not an ownable idea from the fan.
Sure, exactly.
Lucasfilm owns all the Star Wars IP.
Right.
What we can't do is, you know, somebody comes up and says, I've got a rocking new idea for a lightsaber that launches the Force, you know, on a, like a disc.
Right. Well, then you've got to cut that off right then and there.
That wouldn't be a very good product, but what we would say is, oh, I can't listen to you because, you know, if that does come to fruition, we have big problems.
Or if it's also close to something you're already working on.
Precisely.
It could be a problem.
We may have something already in development.
All right, so did you guys hear that? You know, let's keep it legit and let's not bother these guys and distract them from doing the real work of making Star Wars figures. So just before we wrap it up, why don't we just tell me, like, what we got on display here. What is your favorite new thing? Or is any of these things, like, a passion project or something you've been dying to do that you finally got to do?
Well, you know, one of my personal favorite projects has been the really the expanded universe comic packs, because I'm a big comic fan. I've been of all kinds, you know, for years and years. But, you know, really reading what Dark Horse has done and a lot of the great Marvel issues, you know, those figures to me were figures that deserved to be made. And I'm very happy that we're able to continue the comic packs. And, you know, I think the response so far has been tremendous to the ones that we've had out, you know, on the shelves and the ones that are coming. So I'm really pleased to continue that. And one of the ones I'm excited about is there's an issue from Star Wars 31. It features Asherad Head and Dark Woman.
Yeah.
That, to me, that's just an example of how we can take great stories that have been written in other mediums other than the films and bring those characters to life. And I just want to see that continue. So, you know, we've got Baron Fell and Hobby Clivian coming from Rogue Squadron.
And these sell well enough to keep this thing going.
Oh, they're... So far, you know, knock on wood, the fans have really stepped up and said, this is... You know, we've been waiting for this for a while, and it's up to us to deliver the characters they want to see and you know, deliver new sculpts and things to propagate that. But, you know, it's our commitment to keep these going because the fans, you know, really shown an appreciation for that.
And what about these Mandalorian packs over here? That's a new thing too, isn't it?
Yeah, that was one of the big reveals at the show here. We're working with Entertainment Earth on this pack, and the idea is it's actually inspired by a story that Karen Travis wrote in Star Wars Insider a couple years ago, which started to go deeper into the Mandalorian lore and culture.
Right.
Well, we read that and said, this is just a great area to explore in Star Wars, because the Mandalorians are so interesting. They're so cool. It's like, you know, we know about Jango, we know about Boba, but what beyond that? And a few things have been written in the past, like in Knights of the Old Republic and, you know, Mandalore, things like this.
And did you have a chance to put your own input into the so-called canon with these figures?
Absolutely. What we wanted to do is really tell those stories where the Mandalore warriors go to train the first cadres of clones. You know, somebody's got to train these clones and turn them into...
Well, was this your idea, this backstory? Sort of?
Yeah, partly, yeah. Yeah, really our idea. And then, you know, as what usually happens is when we... it's happened historically for years and years at Hasbro. When we have a new idea, but we don't have any head reference for a figure, but we need a head, you know, sometimes often we'll look to, you know, folks within Hasbro.
Of these Mandos here?
Well, I was supposed to be the head for Dread Priest, but it doesn't look very much like me.
Oh, well, you should fire the sculptor on that one. That was... Yeah, that doesn't look too much like you.
I'm okay, because the figure is actually much, much better looking than I am.
And he also bears your name, right?
Yeah, somewhat. It's got my name, Dread Priest, so that's...
Okay, so there you go. I mean, it looks cool. I mean, you got basically just a bunch of different Mandalorian guys in different colors.
Yep,
we've got a couple of chicks, too, which is a new spin on this. And they come with some interesting-looking clone troopers, and I think people are probably going to go for this.
I think the response has been huge, because it really goes to a place in... You know, in the Star Wars lore that we haven't seen before, and that's what we like to do at Hasbro, too, is, like, you know, we feel that we've got opportunities to tell stories as well and go places that people want to see.
Yeah,
and, you know, we just felt that the whole Mandalorian area was ripe for exploration. So, and Lucasfilm agreed. They said, sounds like a great place to go. We're with you. And so we're very excited about that set. So look for that at Entertainment Earth. There are two different two packs, seven figures each, and you can get pricing over there at Entertainment Earth.
Okay, so just one other thing. What can you tell me about these mighty mugs over here?
Yeah, okay.
These are some, let me just describe them because there's no word. These are some very sort of deformed looking, round Lego type characters. They're about 8 inches tall. They have big egg heads and curvy bodies, and we have Mace Windu, Boba Fett, Stormtrooper, Han Solo, Chewbacca, Darth Vader, and Darth Maul, and they look a little bit like sort of urban vinyl toys. Was that intentional?
Our Mighty Mug line is absolutely inspired by urban vinyl, and what's happening with urban vinyl is it's an expression and appreciation of action figures as art form.
Right. Okay?
Something that has been in the hobby for a long time. You yourself have been, you know, part of this trend.
Yeah.
As well. And what we want to do, you know, our R&D guys, you know, the designers who actually make Star Wars, they love this type of stuff. And they wanted to put their own, you know, expression out. They had a real passion for it. So we call it an expression because it's a new type of thing for us. It's a silhouette that is called the Mighty Mug. That's the Hasbro-owned silhouette. And you'll see this silhouette being applied to our other brands as well.
Right, there's some Marvel ones over there, which also look pretty cool.
Exactly, some Marvel's coming out. And so what it is, it's just our, you know, tossing our hat into the ring of an urban vinyl-like expression.
But they're not made out of vinyl, are they?
No, they're made out of ABS and PVC. So
why that instead of actual vinyl?
Well, it's price, you know, affordability. It's our intention to have these be very collectible, but also, you know, very affordable.
I mean, they have the look for sure. Have the people been responding to these?
I think the response has been great. They're not for everyone, but they're for people who really appreciate, you know, unique styling for characters.
And you're going to continue to try to push that envelope even further as time goes on?
Oh, yeah, as time goes on. And, you know, what makes them magic is they each have a different accessory. And they're
very cool looking, too. They're, like, very cartoony and almost whimsical. Like, the lightsaber gets fatter towards the end, and the guns are, like, sort of stubby and fat. It's pretty cute.
Yep.
I think people are going to go for it.
Well, thanks.
All right. Yeah, I like it. So just one more question before we go. At your time at Hasbro doing Star Wars, just tell me your greatest success and your greatest disappointment.
Oh, man. Let me tell you that my greatest success is the fact that, you know, the line, you know, continues to do well. And what it means to me is that the fans have, you know, expressed, you know, passion for what we're doing. And that fuels us, right? So my success is the fact that we're continuing to please fans and satisfy fans. I have no real disappointments except,
Is there something that you wanted to make that just turned out to be not financially doable or just like a fantasy project that you still trying to get off the ground? Or
you know, I would say no. We've actually had a lot of leeway. You know, Lucasfilm has certainly, you know, now that this, you know, episode 3 is behind us and the kind of films are wrapped up, so to speak, you know, the future is bright for all kinds of new ideas, and Lucasfilm has been a phenomenal partner for letting us explore those. So there's nothing really that we've wanted to do that Lucasfilm hasn't, you know, seen a gem of the idea. Maybe it's evolved into something else, but, you know, it's just a great time for Star Wars. A lot of ideas keep flowing out, and because as the success of the line keeps perpetuating itself, you know, we'll keep those new ideas flowing. So the only disappointment I would say is that, you know, we're working a couple years out now. We're starting to wrap our heads around what's in 2009. The real disappointment is I want to share that with everyone now because we're pumped about that. And it's just so, you know, it seems so far away.
Well, it's not. And I think, you know, given the record, I think we can trust that, you know, what's coming out is going to be equally as good and we don't have to really worry about that.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and pretty soon we're going to have every single Cantina creature that even peripherally grace the screen ready for our dioramas, right?
I certainly hope so.
Okay.
I love the cantina. So.
Well, I think you're definitely like the first like marketing rock star that's come along, you know, in a long time. So
it's not about me. It's not about self. It's a huge passionate team here that, you know, everybody loves Star Wars. So, I don't like the individual attention or my name. It's really a team approach here. So
well, that's the right answer.
Everyone should know that.
That's the right thing to say.
This is a Forcecast Microcast.
Now I'm talking to an old grandmaster of the Star Wars action figure line. Your name, sir?
Mark Boudreau.
And your title is?
Senior Principal Designer of Boys Toys Star Wars Team.
Now, you've been with Star Wars since the very beginning. I mean, you were at Kenner, were you not?
That's correct. I had the good fortune of actually joining Kenner in 1977, right before Star Wars came out.
Wow, that's great timing. And so were you involved with the inception of the line and the actual conception of the, you know, the scale and the concept that persists today?
My role was I was a student at the University of Cincinnati, so I was a co-op.
Uh-huh.
So I was involved in helping to help the other designers.
Okay.
So that was my initial role, but I did do the preliminary development on the Millennium Falcon.
Right. Was that your first Star Wars toy that you worked on?
That was my first Star Wars toy, yeah. So that was a great experience.
And you've continued on from then till now doing Star Wars? Or what did you do during the so-called dark years when there was no Star Wars?
Well, I worked for Boys Toys. So in between, I worked on all of the Boys Toys lines we had. Batman, Jurassic Park, Chuck Norris, all of the above.
And were all those lines influenced by the Star Wars line?
I think Star Wars is a unique property. I think it's its own sort of a universe, if you will. So I think other brands try to mimic maybe Star Wars in popularity.
Right.
But I do think it's very difficult to have other brands try to follow Star Wars. If they want to be successful, they have to try to do it on their own.
Yeah, but it seems almost inevitable that somewhere in there the Star Wars influence is there because, I mean, they pretty much invented or reinvented the action figure. It's like you can't, like, rewrite the book on certain things.
That's true. I would say that, you know, from being a designer, your experiences continue to show in other places. You know, how you go about developing toys, making sure that they're good product. So whether we worked on Star Wars or other lines, the designers at Hasbro and Kenner, we would always do our very best to generate the best product line we could.
Now, what is your most favorite Star Wars toy that you've worked on over the years?
I would say I had a chance to do the X-Wing over again and did a Force FX X-Wing. I really enjoyed
that. Yeah, I remember seeing you, I think it was in Toy Fair magazine, sitting there with the toy next to you, and your face was about to explode with a grin on your face. It was pretty exciting for you.
I actually had to do that on my own time, work after hours to develop that.
You were that into it.
Yep.
Awesome. So let me ask you one other thing. You come to a lot of these events, Comic-Con, Star Wars Celebration, et cetera, et cetera. You do, right?
Yes.
Why do you think it's important for Hasbro to come to Comic-Con and represent in such an elaborate manner? I mean, there's so much stuff here. Why is it important to come to Comic-Con?
Well, I think for all the years, the fans have been very supportive of the Star Wars line. And this is just a small way that we can show our appreciation to the fans, to bring the product out to them, to let them see it. It also allows us to meet the fans. We can interact one-on-one, you know, and I think that really puts a face to Hasbro, letting the folks know that the designers are fans as well. And so we're really interested in the product. We're proud of the product. And I think the reactions of the fans kind of show that Star Wars is alive and well, and we love doing the items.
How much influence do the fans' opinions have on the design process?
Well, we do listen to the fans. We have fan choice figures, as you know. So we take into account the fans' thoughts, because it is the fans who keep the Star Wars line going. And so it's a small way for us to give back as well.
Now, that wasn't necessarily always the case, though, was it? I mean, when the line relaunched in 1997, was it, right? And they came out all steroided out and everything. And when it first launched, it was, maybe I'm wrong, but there was a sort of like, the fans were kept a little bit more at arm's length as far as what they thought. Or maybe the Star Wars model was done in a more sort of corporate type approach where it's like, here's the toy, you buy it. And there wasn't so much of a back and forth as there is today. Is that a correct observation? Or?
Well, I think as well, you know, the product line has evolved. When we relaunched it in the mid-90s, you were talking about how the figures were sort of on steroids. That was influenced by the product of the day.
Right.
The product of the day was wrestling. And
right. And it was sort of very speculative to even try to push Star Wars again after all this time.
Right. Would people accept 3 3/4 because all of the other figures were very much larger? But, in the true Star Wars fans were out there. Star Wars to them meant 3 3/4 inches.
Did they make themselves known right away as soon as that first line came out, you know, what they thought and that they were there? I mean, people weren't quite as into the internet at the time as
they
are
true.
Now.
That's true.
You've kind of seen all this whole thing develop over the last decade with, you know, message boards and blogs and, you know, things getting leaked and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I think with the technologies like the internet, it allows us new avenues to get out there and communicate with the fans. You know, we have the weekly Q&As with Daryl DePriest. So I think it just the technology of the day allows Hasbro to better and more efficiently get to the fans.
And does that make your job easier or more difficult?
I think it makes it easier because it just lets us know that we're sort of, you know, we have our finger on the pulse.
Yeah, that's important. People who have been stuck in with this for so long definitely doesn't feel like they're being, like, talked down to or just being, like, glossed over. I mean, people like to come and see the figure that they saw in their fantasies, and it's actually there, and it's actually represented in a correct way, and it's got that little detail that you didn't think anyone else in the world noticed except yourself, and there it is in the figure. And it's like, I mean, does that just come natural to you after all this time to think of that kind of stuff, or do you find yourself challenged, you know, still trying to find ways to make it new?
Well, I do think our goal each and every year is to outdo the product from the year before.
Right.
And so that, hopefully, that's reflected in the quality of the product that you see. The detail in action figures or the detail in vehicles. That's all very important to us because, I said, we're not only designers for the product, we're also fans of the product as well.
Right. Interesting. So I guess one more thing. I mean, you were pretty involved in the Wave Alpha, I guess that's what they call. Isn't that what they call the vintage line, Star Wars Alpha, or is that just folklore that I'm repeating?
Well, you know, I've never heard it named that, but
I guess it'll work. But for the vintage line, what was your favorite toy of the whole vintage line? Was it the Millennium Falcon?
I was the good fortune of working on many items. I didn't work on the figures specifically.
You did mostly the vehicles.
My job was the vehicles. So I would say that the Millennium Falcon, but then also the Slave One.
The Slave One.
Boba Fett is my favorite character.
Yeah, mine too. But it must be interesting, though, like back at the time when, like, it might have seemed like almost a stretch to put out so many vehicles that only had X amount of screen time. And now, like, every nook and cranny is being addressed. I mean, it must be interesting to see, you know, that evolution.
Yes, I mean, it's been 30 years, so, and obviously the interest in Star Wars is as strong as ever. As they're saying, Star Wars is forever.
Apparently.
And I think that's pretty true.
I think it's true, too. So you're going to stick with it until it's all done.
Well, as long as the fans out there like Star Wars, and they always will, as long as they're very supportive of the product line, and as long as the designers are out here to do their job and enjoy their job, which we all do, so I don't see any of that stuff changing in the future. So I think the future for Star Wars is alive and well.
It's looking bright. Well, thank you very much, sir, and have a great Comic-Con.
Thanks, Morgan.
Give yourself to the dark side.
The Vader Project was a very popular exhibit at both Celebration 4 and Celebration Europe. The Suck Lord himself contributed his own helmet to the exhibit, and he tracked down the powers behind the Vader Project at the San Diego Comic-Con.
Impressive.
We're standing right now in the booth of DKE Toys, the premier vinyl distributor in the entire universe. And I'm standing here right now with the master of DKE Toys, Mr. Dove Kellermer. Why don't you say hello to the fans out there in Forcecast world?
Hello, Forcecast world.
Now, anybody who's anybody has been paying attention to seeing the Vader Project when all those awesome massive replica helmets got reinterpreted by all these street, urban, vinyl, hip-hop, graffiti guys. And this is the man that made that whole thing happen. What was the initial impetus for doing the Vader Project?
Well, as you can see here at our booth, or maybe you can't see, but there's a lot of what are called DIY toys, toys that manufacturers make that are blank, and they're made for artists to customize and mash up and do whatever they want to.
DIY meaning do it yourself.
So the next logical progression was to offer out a life-size Vader mask to some well-known artists and see what they could do with it.
So the results, we've all seen the pictures, were fairly impressive. How did you go about selecting or curating the artists that did this project?
Most of them are people that I know that are involved in the graffiti, underground, lowbrow, pop surrealist kind of genre. They're mostly people that I deal with in the designer toy world. And that's pretty much how I wanted to stay away from the traditional well-known Star Wars artists. I needed something new. I needed something that the Star Wars fans had not seen before.
And were the results what you expected? I mean, people at Celebration 4 were kind of blown away by the presentation. Nobody really seen anything from Star Wars reinterpreted in that manner. Was it a raging success?
I think, yeah, in my opinion it was. It's really hard to get artists to do stuff without a deadline. But once we had a deadline, they all started coming in at the last minute. So it was hard to really know if we had anything until it was all set up. But once it was up, I think we all knew we had something.
And what was Lucasfilm's reaction to the project?
Everyone who saw it was very impressed.
Do you think you're going to keep going with this type of thing?
I think there's so many opportunities for, you know, reinterpretive Star Wars art, and I think that there's more projects in the works. I'd like to get other products out there that the fans can buy and customize themselves. I think there's just a big market for that.
So you really think you're going to take the success of the Vader Project and try to turn it into sort of like an industry, if you will, and build it as a brand and offer people, you know, things that they can buy that relate to the gallery experience?
That remains to be seen. I don't know how much I'm going to do personally, but I'd like to see more life in Star Wars and see, you know, more creativity from, you know, external forces coming in. And you
think there's a good chance of that happening?
I hope so.
Well, yeah, the Vader Project was such a hit. There's some helmets here at the Lucas Pavilion as well. You want to talk about those a little bit? How's it going over here at Comic-Con as compared to Celebration?
There's not a lot of hype here. You know, there's so much to see at Comic-Con that the 10 helmets that are in the Star Wars Pavilion, I don't know if they're getting lost, but, you know, I keep asking people, did you see them? And, you know, you can walk around this room for a year and not see everything, so there's some really great artists in that show, so I hope everyone does check them out.
Okay, so what's next for the Vader Project?
We're talking to a lot of different people. A lot of people want to take it overseas to Japan. A lot of different companies have approached us. Unfortunately, because it's so big and the helmets are so large, taking 75 helmets around the world is really expensive. So, you know, we're just looking for the right people to come along and, you know, who have the space, you know.
And who want to pay for it.
It's just shipping the stuff over there, setting it up. It's just, it's really a huge endeavor.
Are the helmets for sale?
Eventually, and I urge everyone to go to thevaderproject.com and sign up, and all the information will be available there when they go up for sale.
Smashing, just smashing. So thanks for the interview, Mr. Kellermer, and good luck with your vinyl toy business. It seems like it's going pretty well from over here.
Take care, man.
You underestimate the power of the dark side.
The galaxy is listening.
We're here right now in the Lucas Arts booth, and if you've ever been to any one of these conventions, then you know it is definitely the cleanest, nicest, most tight booth out there. White Formica, white consoles, it's beautiful. You've been running this booth for a while. Wait, wait. Tell me your name first.
My name is Matt Schell.
And what's your official job title at LucasArts?
I am an integrated marketing manager at LucasArts.
So it's mostly your job to come out to these cons and glad hand with the fans and sort of rep the new stuff.
It's one aspect of my job. It entails a lot more than just that, but this is one of the more fun things I get to do, yeah.
I mean, is it really important for your business to come to Comic-Con and events like this?
Absolutely, yeah. We want to be able to get out there, let the fans see the stuff that we have coming out in the future. Most importantly, you know, let them get their hands on it and actually play it, because these are video games. They're fun, and it's really, you can hear about them and read about them all you want, but until you got your hands on them and actually get to play them, that's when you really get to see the potential.
So what's the sort of hot thing you're leading with this time around?
Well, as you can see from the lines, I think one of the most exciting things we have showing here, at least from the fans' perspective, is the new LEGO Star Wars The Complete Saga. And we've got it showing on both the Xbox 360 and the Wii, and people are just loving their chance to get a hold of a lightsaber with a Wiimote. So
I know, people have been, that was like probably when the Wii first came out, that was like the natural second thought people had, when are the Star Wars games going to come out?
Yeah, people have been talking about it for a while.
So is that game out on the market now?
It's not out yet, no. It comes out on November 6th.
So the Wii game is the LEGO game?
We've got LEGO Star Wars The Complete Saga, which again comes out in November. That's going to be available on the Xbox 360, the PS3, the DS, and the Nintendo Wii. We also have the brand new, the next iteration in the Battlefront franchise, which is Battlefront Renegade Squadron. So I'm sure you're familiar with Star Wars Battlefront.
Yeah.
Let you play the classic Star Wars battles any way you want. Now we have a new version built specifically for the PSP, so now you can play it anywhere you want as well. There's all sorts of new customization and personalization options in the game. We've got new multiplayer aspects. You can play 8 players Wi-Fi, you know, close with your friends.
Right.
And 16 players over the internet in infrastructure mode. We've got new heroes, new abilities in space, and of course, based on the name of the game, Renegade Squadron, you actually have a single-player mode, a story campaign. We get to play as one of the handpicked members of Han Solo's Renegade Squadron. And of course, The Force Unleashed, which is the next iteration of the Star Wars saga. It's literally the next big event in the Star Wars universe. It's going to be a video game that we're creating. So we're actually, not only, you know, are we creating Star Wars canon, we're adding to the entire Star Wars universe. We have a game coming out which is going to let you use the Force in ways like you have never used before. We are treating The Force Unleashed like a movie release. It's going to be that big. It's going to have really in-depth characters and story. We have great technology to make the really blow this thing out. And so, you know, when we do that, we want to have the retail component as well. We're going to have books, you know, comic books. There's going to be an art book. We have action figures. It's going to be a very big deal.
That's pretty awesome.
And it's the next it literally is the next chapter. I mean, the movies, as we all know, have ended.
Right.
So we got to keep bringing, you know, Star Wars to the fans. And then the way we're going to do that next is with The Force Unleashed.
We return to a galaxy far, far away. During an interstellar civil war stands Darth Vader's apprentice. In Star Wars, The Force Unleashed, that warrior is you. May the Force be with you when the game is unleashed in spring 2008.
This is a ForceCast Microcast.
Hello, baby. This is Ken, the Elvis Trooper, coming live from Comic-Con, baby.
So how long has the Elvis Trooper been on the scene? I mean, you're at all the conventions all the time. How long have you been out here representing?
I've been doing this strong for about 6 years now.
Job, huh? You call it a job. So this is real work out here, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of fun, though. A lot of fun. Having fun with the fans.
You could barely walk the floor. You're always getting swamped, taking pictures. Does this ever get tiring for you?
The long days get a little tiring.
And what do you do to keep yourself inspired?
Oh, I try to get a nap and eat some food.
How are the ladies out here at the cons for you these days?
Oh, there's lots and lots of lovely ladies, and I love them all.
So tell me, you got a little something going here with Gentle Giant. They've kind of adopted you in a way and made a little bust of you. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
That is true. That is true. We did a one-of-a-kind bust at Celebration 4. We did the raffle, and all proceeds went to the American Cancer Society. That was a lot of fun. The fans donated quite a bit. We raised over $4,000 for American Cancer Society. And General Giant's been great to me, so I've just been hanging out with them, and they're a lot of fun to work with.
That's fantastic, giving something back to the community. But what's it been like working with the General Giant over here? You have any plans to do anything in the future with them?
Well, actually, I just found out today there might be a little surprise coming in the future. Not that I can say anything, but it should be something fun if it works through.
Anything here Star Wars-wise that you're particularly excited about, or is it all about you?
Oh, I love all the Star Wars statues, maquettes, busts. and all the vendors that do Star Wars stuff. Lots of great toys out there, baby.
I mean, you've been pretty embraced by the Star Wars community. That's obvious. But has the any, you know, people from the Presley estate ever made any attempt to address your act?
Not from the Presley estate. Hopefully I'm not going to hear from them, actually.
I mean, do you ever go? I mean, this might be a corny question, but I'm just curious. You're a Star Wars guy, but do you ever do any Elvis shit? Do you ever cross over into any, you know, contests, impersonation contests, anything like that?
I haven't as of yet. People ask me that all the time, but I'm looking into it.
Can you sing?
I can sing a little bit, but at this convention, after I say a thousand thank you very much as my voice starts to go out.
You ain't nothing but a tauntaun.
Well, that's all right, Jabba, baby.
Yeah, well, there you go. So, well, we're excited to see what happens next with the old E.T. over here. You like to make any closing remarks for your fans out there?
Oh, baby. I know you all love Star Wars, and just to let you know, the Elvis Trooper loves Star Wars too, baby.
Huh. And you're going to keep this going until you can't do it anymore?
Oh, I'm just going to keep going, baby. It's a lot of fun.
All right. And what about the Rebel Alliance? Any messages for them?
All right, you rebel scum. Send all your hot babies over.
Thanks, man.
Well, that's all right, Jabba. That's all right for you. That's all right, Jabba. Just any way you do. That's all right. That's all right. That's all right now, Jabba. Any way you do.
I will deal with this Jedi slime myself.
This is Matthew Wood. I play General Grievous, and you're listening to The Force Cast.
All right, I'm trying to weasel in here and get a quick interview with Matthew Wood over here. He's signing General Grievous autographs, and this crowd is swarming around him, and the money is changing hands, and I can barely get a word in edgewise, but there's a momentary lull, so we're just going to ask him, Mr. Wood, how's the Comic-Con going for you so far?
It's been crazy, but I got a real fast second to talk to you, but it's been great, man. San Diego is, like, totally, I can't believe how many people are here. You can barely walk through the halls, but, you know, it's California where I live, and, sunshine is good, the weather's good, I'm feeling good, and you know, we're showing off some stuff from the new animated series. We've got a lot of exciting things happening with Lucasfilm in the coming, you know, year here, and it's just been a great fan response. And,
yeah, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, the thing that's most interesting about you, though, is, like, you're originally, like, you're a sound designer engineer. You're Ben Burtt's assistant.
Ben Burtt and I worked together. We co-supervised all the prequels together, and so I learned a lot of my, you know, sound design and sound work from him. Definitely has been a complete mentor to me.
But it's just weird, though, because you didn't set out to become, like, a celebrity or anything.
No, I did not.
I mean, you did Grievous's voice just because you happened to be the guy standing there, right?
No, man, it's a little more complex than that, but yeah, I was at the right place in the right time. I auditioned just like everybody else.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did, and I happened to do it anonymously, and I got picked. So.
Oh, really? So you didn't use your Ben Burtt clout to get the
role?
No.
It got my foot
talent.
In the door, for sure. It got
oh,
my
no
foot
way,
in the
no
door.
Way. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty interesting. But so when people come and they want your autograph, do they want your autograph because you did Grievous's voice or because you make dope sound effects?
I think 99.9% of the people want it for Grievous.
Do you ever
and then
get
the other .001 might want it for Bib Fortuna in episode one, and then maybe, you know, when lightning strikes, I get somebody who wants it for sound.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that's weird, though, because people seem to take the sound for granted a lot of the time, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, it's, as George says, it's 50% of the experience, and so that's what the majority of my career has been.
But
so.
The average viewer doesn't necessarily realize that.
No, they don't.
It's
no.
funny, too, because they're showing the original Star Wars trailer up here, and it's like, that has a sound effects, but it doesn't have the music, and
right.
it makes such a tremendous difference.
Sound is definitely a huge component of movie making, especially in the Star Wars films.
Yeah, but it seems like you're kind of an unsung hero in a way.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, doing the Grievous thing has got me a little exposure that normally a sound person would not. So I had to come about it through a non-conventional way, but I, you know, it's been great to actually have the fan response and then be able to, you know, go back to the ranch and go work on the show and feel a little bit more energized about what we're doing.
Definitely, it must be cool. Do you get a lot of chicks from doing Grievous?
I'm going to plead the fifth on that one.
I mean, but you got your fans, right? I mean,
there
you're
are,
a good-looking young guy.
There are
you know,
fans.
It's like,
yes,
you know,
there are
like,
fans.
All right, and we'll leave it at that. Grievous groupies, right here at Comic-Con. You heard it first here on the Forcecast.
Goodbye!
Well, that'll wrap things up for this Forcecast special report from the San Diego Comic-Con. Thanks to Matthew Wood, Hasbro's Darryl DePriest, and Mark Boudreau, Lucasfilm's Bonnie Burton, Ken the Elvis Trooper, and, of course, the Suck Lord. Be sure to visit Suckadelic.com for music, custom figures, and more. And check out A Galaxy of Music Volume 6 for more on the Super Suck Lord and the music of Star Wars Breakbeats. That'll do it for the 2007 San Diego Comic-Con ForceCast Special Report. Thanks for listening. For TheForce.net and RebelScum.com, I'm Jimmy Mack.
May the Force be with you, bro.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of TheForce.net LLC unless otherwise indicated.